Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
Well, I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Decade Project. This is a One Heat Minute Productions Patreon exclusive to begin with podcast where we look at films 10 years in our rear view, things that have resonated, things that have hung around, things that have had a huge influence, or things that are dying to be revisited. And today I'm joined by one of my favorite humans on the planet. She's a terrific writer. She writes all over the place, had a long stint in the Nerdist team, writing way more intellectually about different fandoms that deserve nothing but to be thrown into the fire. She's also written some of my favorite pieces of long-form film criticism for the great publication Bright Wall Dark Room. And we did a podcast together. It is Lindsay Romaine. Hey, Linz.
Hi, Blake. You're one of my favorite humans on the planet, too. So I'm always thrilled when we get to chat like this.
It is good. It is good. We do always have fun. Now, we're going to have fun in a podcast reflecting on, and it's, I was trying to chart back. I'm like, did I talk about a best picture in the last 2 years of Decade Projects? And I'm not actually sure if I did. And this is a rare one. And at the time, I think when this movie came out, there was kind of like, it's kind of the weird Oscar math science of like, it was everyone's second or third favorite movie of that year. And that almost guarantees that if you were the second or third favorite movie that year, you're an Oscar front runner, unless you're like a behemoth like Oppenheimer. But this movie was called, probably badly for me, people were immediately saying it was Our Generation's All the President's Men. And I told, you know, instantly that got me up going like, wait, just pump the brakes. But I want you to have a listen to the Oscar winning Best Picture trailer of Tom McCarthy and co-written by Tom McCarthy as well and Josh Singer. Terrific, terrific investigative journalism story set in Boston. Spotlight.
I know there's things you cannot tell me, but I also know there's a story here, and I think everybody will hear about it.
Do you think your paper has the resources to take that on?
I do. Do you?
The Boston priest molested kids in six different parishes over the last 30 years. The church found out about it and did nothing.
We haven't committed any long-term investigative resources to the case.
No, we haven't.
And that's the kind of thing your team would do.
Spotlight. Guys, listen. Everybody's going to be interested in this.
Obviously, the church will fight us very hard.
Trying to get some background information.
I don't want you recording this in any way, shape, or form. Nothing.
We understand you've settled several cases against the church.
I can't discuss that.
There aren't any records of any of these settlements.
Nope.
When you're a poor kid from a poor family, and when a priest pays attention to you, it's a big deal. How do you say no to God?
Spotlight.
Just the tip line.
You think he's got something?
I want to keep digging.
We need to focus on the institution. Show me that it came from the top down.
Okay, Linz, when this movie came out, we were fledgling community members of this extended film criticism community. We probably weren't writing as much at different publications and things like that. But I know that you've got like fresh memories of your own experience watching this back then. So tell me about your experience with Spotlight, because I think universally it was kind of like a four, you know, a 3.5 or 4 out of 5 felt like a consensus picture. Great content, good actors, you know, very accomplished technical movie, like not over the top, not flashy, keeping very grounded on the, you know, because the story content is so extreme. So it was all about people and personalities and big feelings and people holding things, like, you know, all these volatile emotions and trauma in these little containers of their bodies, and then occasionally letting it out and exploding across the screen. But it wasn't a very sort of like flashy movie, hence a lot of the comparisons. But then there was a weird thing. I don't know if you remember in your experience. It was a bit of a weird thing. It's like when it won Best Picture, people were like, yeah, fine. Just people felt like deflated. But do you remember what your experience was seeing it? Did you immediately love it? Did you? What was your experience with Spotlight?
Yeah, I actually think I watched it after it had won Best Picture. I didn't see it in theaters. And so, and I think because it won Best Picture, it intrigued me. But, you know, as we've talked about, like, off mic, I love a journalism movie. I call The President's Men one of my favorites as well. So hearing those comparisons was kind of like, eh. But I think I was a little more tuned out of, like, some of the Oscar talk and stuff back then, again, because I wasn't really, like, as in the, like, writing world. But, well, I guess I kind of was, but, you know, again, like you said, fledgling.
We were both in early days. Earlier
yeah,
days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Developing a voice still. not quite having the, yeah, all of the...
Not looking down at the thousands of articles you posted, or me looking at the thousands of podcasts I've recorded, and I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Totally. And I think I was still writing about, like, I don't know, like Game of Thrones or something at the time, you know, making my freelance money. So
yes.
Like... Spotlight, not exactly like, you know, poppy freelance content. But I remember when I did watch it, it hit a lot of sweet spots for me because one, I got my writing start in newspapers. So I wrote as a young person, like right out of high school, I wrote for my county newspaper in town covering like city council meetings, and like I profiled profiled the mayor, and like I was from a really small town, so you know that's kind of how I got in.
Look,
but
it's a cool start, it's a rad start. I wish I could have, you know, I came from the Central Coast, which is, you know, an hour and a half north of Sydney when I grew up, and the Express Advocate I remember was the local newspaper at the time, and I was like, I wish I could write film reviews for the Express Advocate. That was like a mini dream. I've never even said that to anyone before.
But it's true. It's like there's something romantic about like newspaper writing, right? And that was like, I loved it. Like, even though I was covering like really boring shit at the time, it was like, it also like you get intrigued. I got pulled into like city politics and stuff I wouldn't have cared about. But yeah, you get excited about it. And then actually, so I went to journalism school as well. When I graduated from journalism school, at first I had kind of like a little content writing job, but my first like kind of big break was also I worked at the Chicago Tribune, so a giant newspaper here. And I worked for like a little offshoot publication called The Red Eye, which people in Chicago will know. It doesn't exist anymore, but it used to be like the free kind of like younger version.
We used to have that in Sydney. Yeah, there'd be one called, it was called MX. A friend of mine, Mel Matheson, used to be the editor. And like it was a cool little paper that you picked up leaving work when you're about to catch the train home or something like that, or and you just grab it, and you know, everyone on the commute is like got an MX folded in some weird way, reading about upcoming shows or this cool thing that's happening.
That's exactly what Red Eye was, especially it was like by train stops, so and like bus stops and stuff, and that was the idea. It was kind of like your transit publication, but it was kind of geared like a little more fun, I guess, than a regular newspaper. So it was a lot of pop culture stuff, but also like, you know, crime reports and stuff, and events. So kind of like covered a lot. I just did social media content for Red Eye, but we were in the Chicago Tribune building. So we shared, you know, a floor with the hardcore like reporters. So we're watching people. I remember my first day, actually kind of related to Boston, was the Boston like marathon bombing. That was my first day at the Tribune. So it was watching like the chaos of kind of like a breaking news thing happening like that. It was a real like throw you in the deep end kind of experience. But like as I was there, I slowly started to like be like, hey, can I write maybe for the Red Eye too? So I slowly started to do some pop culture kind of like little writing for them too. And then a couple of them got put into like the Tribune like opinion section. So like I kind of worked my way up a little bit there. But I love newspapers, and I really, it's like a high being in those rooms. And so I was drawn to this movie for that reason. I also grew up Catholic, so
Same.
have all that baggage that so like kind of the
Oh, can
intersection of like
oh, I can see it now. It's the guilt that's just hovering behind you.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
Yeah.
The guilt is like, I don't think I realized until I got older how much Catholic guilt like
Oh.
plagued me. Because we weren't like my, I think as many Catholic families, it's like it was a little bit kind of, we just went to church. It wasn't like a really ingrained like belief
It
system, but
was
I
a
had to do
routine.
all the,
You had
yeah,
to
it was
do
a
all the stuff.
routine.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I had to do like catechism and like confirmation. So I had to do like the confession and like, yeah, you do like all that stuff is just in your brain. And when I first was going through that stuff, we had a priest who was like kind of creepy, to be honest. And so nothing that affected me, but like just kind of witnessing the weirdness sometimes of those guys. And then after him, we had a really great priest. But like, yeah, I like, when you're Catholic, you kind of maybe even just indirectly like know kind of that there's like an underbelly to stuff going on. And so to see it so exposed in this film, and I knew the story a little bit, it was a big one here. I mean, it's a big one worldwide, but
Big one
especially
worldwide.
here. Yeah. I think, and in journalism school, like you learn about it. So I knew it, but I don't think I knew quite the gravity of it until watching the movie. So it was both fun and propulsive because, like you said, it's a very tight script and a very like efficient movie in a lot of ways. But it's also because of that, it makes the information very like digestible. You really like feel it. You're really in the story with them because of how fast it's going, because you're following the reporters. And so I loved it. I remember watching it and being like, I wish that all Best Picture winners are this like kind of just like well made. It's like the thing that I, and this is like, I don't consider myself too much of like a stuffy, pretentious person, but as I get older, I'm like, I want to watch movies for like grown-ups, like a
Yeah.
grown-up movie. And this is a grown-up movie about like, I don't know, like it's simple. It's not, there's no like pomp and circumstance really. It's not flashy in a way a lot of Oscar movies are, where you feel like they're just trying to like, I don't know, appeal to like an academy. It's just like it's a movie that's great and that's it. And yeah, I love it for that. It's one of my favorite Best Picture winners for that reason.
I agree. It grew on me a lot. I had a bit of a reverse inverse impact at the time because I was just like, yeah, it's fine. And I had that comparison to older presidents. And you know me, I'm a bit more like, come on. Like any person that's like, you know, we're making a heist movie, you know, it's really kind of influenced by Heat. I'm like, get a grip. Just like
Right.
there's the words that just, I'm like, get a grip. You can't say that. You can say Heat's one of your favorite movies and if you could do anything that's in its universe, like if I made a movie tomorrow and it had a heist element, I'd be saying people know how much Heat means to me, and like Heat is ultimately in the crime genre. It's a heist. It has some of the best heist stuff, but it's a human drama. So if I could have a drama that was as affecting and as sticky as Heat, and make something that was even in the universe that could be compared to it, then I'd be honored. But I'm not gonna blaspheme Heat and say that I'm, you know, influenced by it in that way. So I always get my like, you know, get a bit sort of up about that. So when I watched it, I think what I undervalued at the time deeply was just a very accomplished, very modest, and very focused approach to how the story was going to be told. And then just its flawless execution of that very, I don't want to say simple in like a negative way, but like simple in the way that you look at a beautiful, I don't know, like a beautiful piece of design technology, whether it's like an Apple, like you look at like an Apple Mac compared to sometimes like a clunky, you get a MacBook Pro next to like a clunky Lenovo laptop. No offense to Lenovo, you know, but you look at them next to each other and you're like, one's really beautiful and clean and lean. It just everything about it is just so, just very elementally perfectly designed for the function that it's of the storytelling form. So I think that's really good. But I'd had this absolutely transcendent cinema going experience in late 2012 in Australia. I'm not sure when it would have happened in the States for you guys, but in 2012, director Alex Gibney did a documentary which is called Mea Maxima Culpa, Silence in the House of God, which is about the sexual abuse in the Catholic Church, but particularly focuses on this very series of heinous crimes that happen with disadvantaged, not only financially disadvantaged kids, but kids who were kids who are deaf or kids who are mute. And these kids who, you know, as Spotlight sort of tells us in these stories, were targeted because they couldn't, because of shame, because it was piled on piled. It was like all the things that you see in Spotlight and the worst scenarios that happen in Spotlight, but then piled onto kids who literally can't like say anything once these things had happened to them. So the abuse was extended and more extreme. And I remember seeing that movie, and that movie, like, I was not right for like a week after seeing that movie. And obviously that was the impact of Alex Gibney. He's a great documentary filmmaker, made many great films since. And so I remember seeing that. So the Spotlight stuff didn't hit me like a ton of bricks, probably like some people who were less familiar, because I just had that story and they referenced Spotlight and they referenced some of the stuff there. So that just hit me like a ton of bricks as a documentary. But as you've said, Oscar movies sometimes, and I heard like a really funny argument the other day. It's like, I wish that, you know, the Oscar branches sometimes, like, instead of rewarding the movie that maybe they want to like hang their hat on and say, this is such a great movie, but no one sees it, realize that there's nothing wrong with like a terrific piece of genre filmmaking. Like, this is a journalism movie at its core, and it's a terrific piece of genre filmmaking, and it's got some stickiness and it hangs around. And so since then I've watched it, I don't know, like you and I do have weird comfort movies, Spotlight, Zodiac.
My top two, honestly.
And, you know, I talk about this with my friend Maria Lewis, my best mate. She, you know, we talk about this one all the time because, you know, it's just a very easy comfort watch for us, a journalism movie. Those halcyon days are like the last great times of journalism before internet journalism kind of destroyed physical paper media. And so I consistently go back to it, and I just love all of the actors in it. And I love that when you look across all these people, it's like, it's really nice that they have a best picture in their resume. It's like nice that, you know, Michael Keaton has a couple of best pictures in his resume in successive years, but it's like, it's really nice that all these actors, you know, no matter what they're doing, even when, you know, Rachel McAdams is doing Game Night, she won best picture for Spotlight. Like, that's such a rad thing for all these people. And so it's really cool.
And then she got an acting nomination for this movie too.
She's excellent. Yeah. Excellent. And so I had a really terrific time. I want to just quickly shout out, because there's so many great actors in this. The guy who I am just consistently more and more impressed with every time I watch this movie is Liev Schreiber.
Yep. Every time I watch it, the same thing. He's kind of like the MVP of this movie, weirdly.
The low key, I'm like, he's such a good big actor. Excuse me, he's such a good big actor sometimes, and, you know, flashy and scenery chewing. But just whenever Tom McCarthy, the director, who's also a great actor himself, but if whenever he had that idea that he was going to do this and just like get this guy to come and just be this awkward, you know, presence that just had this, I don't know, this really buoyant, journalistic, disruptive sort of sense, but like just keeps everything so close to the vest. I always watch this movie now, and like, you know, maybe 10 years ago I would have been like, you know, full Keaton, you know, full Michael Keaton. My son's named Keaton. I mean, of course he's my guy, so that's a huge one, but it's like, that's the guy that I keep watching and I'm just riveted with every single time. He's so awesome.
He's great. And I felt the same way. Like, I think the first several times I watched the movie, you're kind of like bombarded almost by Keaton, and also like Mark Ruffalo kind of takes up a lot of like real estate in this movie. and he's good. His performance is kind of funny, like when you watch it. I still like him,
he's putting a lot of mustard on it. Everything's like, he's got a, this is what a great actor Mark Ruffalo is, like he's got a bit, he's doing something with his eye gestures in the movie to affect a very unique part of his face. His posture is weird. Even when he does running scenes in this movie, he's got a weird run, like he practiced a run. And it's like, this is, you know, you see some of the touches that really dedicated actors put on something. Like, he really had a view, and he's the biggest and most flashiest, I guess, in the whole movie, because there's a lot of like downplaying, because he's really trying to nail Mark Resendez's entire, you know, physical presence. But it's then, you know, Brian Darcy James, who's Matt, is like the mustachioed other, the fourth guy, the least known guy in the room of, you know, Michael Keaton and Rachel McAdams and Mark Ruffalo, him Marty Baron as Liev Schreiber as Marty Baron, John Slattery as Ben Bradley Jr. Mm. Like those guys in the background tend to me now like to really, really shine. And I think Billy Crudup knows how he makes his money, which is to be the worst human being alive and smile about it. And I just love that. And I think it just, the intensity of the movie, it doesn't really go up in a steady incline. It goes up in steps. Like the step changes in this movie work so beautifully. I think Josh Singer does a brilliant job of like step change, step change, step change. And it just goes up and up and up. It's just wonderful.
Yeah. I think the thing too about like the Mark Ruffalo performance is that it aids in that up and up and up, right? Like he gets kind of more extreme as he gets excited. Yeah. Like, and he gets excited. And so he's rushing to things. He's such a newspaper guy too. If you've worked in a newspaper, there's always that like over eager kind of like slightly annoying, like guy who's like a little bit of a character, but who's like a great reporter because of that. And so watching him feels very like, you just like recognize that guy if you've been in a journalism setting before. I think to get back to Liev Schreiber, he's like the quiet, it works that kind of step thing that you're talking about where like, you know, you keep hitting these beats where suddenly there's like another shocking kind of revelation, but the shocking revelations come, it's not like some big, like the music is crazy or whatever. It's like, it hits you in the gut more. Like when you start, the pieces start coming together and you start realizing like who's in on it and who's been aiding and abetting this like terrible system of abuse. And then at the end you get kind of Liev Schreiber like opening up, like he's been this quiet presence the whole time. And when you hear him like really kind of open up and talk and like show his like confidence in the story, it just like, you know, that kind of guy too, right? Where it's like, ooh, you impressed that guy. Like it's like,
that's
really
the hardest person
harder.
To impress. If you get that person finally like really great job. It's just like, oh
yeah.
The gravity of this thing must be monstrous.
Yeah. And the fact that he's kind of an outsider, right? He's like new to the paper and brought in and they don't really trust him or know him yet. Like he's kind of disrupting the way things have flowed before, but then realizing like, oh, he's actually like really got confidence in us. He's just subtle about it so that we get the best possible reporting and stuff. It's like, yeah, you know that guy too, for sure. It's like, there's always one of those. So he's really great. He's also the one that stands out to me a lot when I watch. And also like you're saying, like Brian D'Arcy James, like Rachel McAdams, they're very, not like stoic characters, but they are kind of like background, not background either. I get, you know what I mean? Like they're kind of the presences.
There's no insults here, but it's just like, it's very, there's some people who are putting a lot of, you know, Ruffalo probably is that engine of like, there's a lot of other performative things that he's doing. But Tom McCarthy for the rest of these guys is like, no, just everything is like, you're in a quiet dungeony office. You're trying to keep things close to the vest. For the most part, when you're interacting with other people that aren't your core team or these things, you're trying and you're dealing with victims, it's kid's gloves. It's not like these big flashy performances. It's just very steady, authentic, you know, journalism performances where it's like asking increasingly penetrating and expansive questions to dig to the heart of the stories. And, you know, there's that one that scene where Sasha is talking to one of the victims and she's like, I think language is really important. We can't use these words. You have to tell me specifically. And the really beautiful actor who's doing this really heightened, panicked, emotional scene is like, I think we should go for a walk because they're in like a nice cafe and he doesn't want to start saying all the things that happened to him. And so she's hearing the gravity of everything that he went through. It's just like, Jesus, like every...
Yeah.
You just watch all of their faith in this institution, just not their faith in general, but the faith in the institution just peel away. They're like, no, this is not for me.
Well, in Sasha's case, it is also the peeling away of her beliefs because she's Catholic. So that's like a nice kind of like, her family is like very Catholic. And so that's a nice kind of like just little, they don't overplay that, but it's just kind of in the background that like, in addition, like her doing this reporting work is also going to potentially like make her ostracized in her very Catholic family and stuff. And so there's a lot of those like nice little character beats in there too. The other thing I really love kind of related to that about this movie is that it shows a lot of the grunt work of like reporting. Like it's not all just like the cool revelation stuff or like the flashy stuff. Like we see them going through like, you know, the books that they find in like the basement or whatever, and we see them answering phones and like scribbling notes, and like it's so realistic in that sense too. And like, yeah, you get to see that like the job of a journalist is not always like, in fact, it's usually not really that exciting. It's a lot of like, yeah, going through paperwork, trying to find like a little nugget of information in a document or whatever. And I love that because it makes that interesting though, right? It's not like we're just watching them like go through stuff. It's like, yeah.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Journalism is not necessarily like a, I mean, at certain levels, if you're like a TV journalist, and I think sometimes like we're popularized like a morning show host or whatever, and you see them live in these flashy apartments and they make a squillion bucks or whatever. But I just love that these are working class people ultimately, like in a lot of ways. It's like Mike Resendez has that like, he's, you know, not with his partner. He's in this terrible like one bedroom hole in the wall right next to elevated rail in Boston. It's just like looks like a hell. And Sasha lives with her grandmother, like, who lives in Southie. Like, her and her husband have moved in to take care of her, and so they live there. And when you see I'm always gonna forget the character names are always gonna like make me have to go back. And Brian Darcy James is Matt Carroll when he discovers that there's like a treatment, in quotations, treatment center next to his house. He's just living in like a modest little home with his family. Like, it's all, there's a great deal of modesty in that. And I think that that's another thing that's like super affecting. It's like, there's not these big, beautiful, gorgeous, lavish things. Journalism is not like just a money grab in this instance. It's just like working class people. So they're in their communities. Yeah. Like, they can't escape the story. The story starts, not only does the story start growing, but then the encroaching sense of like, Boston as a church city with all these different churches. Everywhere they look, at peering out of every cafe, walking down every street, there's a church. And it's just omnipresent, which is, you know, very, very interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a really good point about the fact that journalism is not a money job at all. It's a like a passion job. It's like these people are doing this because they love it. And I think that's an important kind of thing to watch now as like the institutions of journalism are being eroded all the time, where, you know, like you said, the internet has kind of changed everything, but also, you know, certain administrations making us distrust like the news, and it's really kind of like crumbled people's like news sense and their like comprehension of how these things work. And it's nice to watch this movie and see like these are people who really care about the truth, who really care about bringing that truth out, no matter how difficult it is for them personally. It's like people sacrificing their lives in some ways or their livelihoods just to like break this important story that will save people, you know, or like make these horrible things known. And it's almost like the last time I watched it, I remember feeling almost like emotional because I'm just like, man, journalists are so cool. They're just like, you know, there's certain like definitely major publications that have been influenced by business stuff or whatever. But like when you cut down to the nitty-grittiness, it's like, yeah, it's just people who are obsessed with bringing stories forward, and they're storytellers in a different way maybe than we always maybe think, you know, they're not telling fiction, but it's the same kind of muscle. And yeah, it's just it's more effective every time I watch it.
And I just love all the other faces in the newsroom. There's a great actor, Gene Amoroso, plays Steve Kirkjian, who's like one of the older mustachioed, kind of walrus mustachioed kind of like journalists there, that's like friends with Ben Bradley Jr. and friends with Mark Resendez, and those guys all very friendly with each other and clearly really talented journalists. But I just love they're like, no fuss, like Mike's hanging around his desk to try to get a sense of what the editorial meeting is going to be, and he's like, hey, go hover somewhere else. I got shit to do. Like, leave me alone. Yeah. I just love some of the like no nonsense workmen. Like, no, I've got stuff to do here. I'm writing a story and it's important. So buzz off. You know, you're interrupting me. So I do love all of that. There's something like now, fast forward to 10 years later, it's the idea of a journalist, and you were part of Zodiac Chronicle and, you know, all the president's minutes and things like that. And it just felt like the landscape of journalism, you know, even in 2020, so we're only talking 5 years ago, was a really different landscape. You know, it was already cannibalized within an inch of its life, and there were still phenomenal journalists working, but the publications that were still operating at this really high tier, and actually with different political and socioeconomic and religious ethical considerations, would always have this sort of harmony of like, the truth is here. It doesn't matter to me that this is necessarily going to affect, you know, my slice of culture here. It's like, what is most important to the people who are going to be consuming this news? And I think that that's what's so cool about Spotlight in many ways is like, you know, in the post, the ramifications of the journalism that, you know, Woodward and Bernstein are doing are like massive international ramifications, you know, basically, you know, forcing a president's hand to resign rather than to be impeached at the time, etc. But we've just seen so many, and this story mattering and meaning something to a community that then in microcosm that then has like international ramifications for, you know, the Catholic Church. And so, but it's just so weird now. It just made me yearn for those days of like a true local paper that cares deeply about a constituency of readers in a town, first and foremost, to say, these are the institutions of your towns and they need to be looked at. And then that impact resonating and cascading through the media of your town or your state, and that having a potential impact. Because I feel like so much of like the journal, what happens in the journalism chat is all these just like, this publication has an agenda or this publication has an agenda. And it's like really hard to find things because of all the battleground that journalism's become and like the battleground of the different mediums. You know, we need news in TikTok form. That's why like people, there's like a really great in Australia, there's a really great Instagram, or maybe he's a TikTok account, like of a former teacher who's called Punter's Politics, and basically just talks about how the Australian government keeps giving huge mining companies like all these concessions and they pay $0 in tax and they defraud our tax system, but we're just sort of on their teat and normal people get screwed over, and that's his like bent. And it's like, this is the super consumable version of this, but there should be, these stories should matter. Like the stories that he references in his research that stitches together these actually sad satirical news bits, I'm like, they should matter. And I feel like increasingly people, like no matter what the impact of the story, we're all kind of like deadened in many ways of like, what can I care about? Cause there is so much going wrong. What can I invest my time in? There's no local, it doesn't feel like the local identity is there as much anymore. It's like everyone is bombarded by this international stuff. And it's like, this is one of those last times that it's like a truly local story that becomes international. But these guys are caring more about the people who've been impacted in their town.
Yeah, exactly. It's something I think like, that exact idea is, you know, I think the real journalism to follow these days is kind of the more grassroots stuff, right? Yes. Like not necessarily the, especially if you're in a big city, you know, there's not really like a small town newspaper or whatever, but there's like, I don't know, people, I have like friends that I went to journalism school with who have like started publications here, like ground reporting stuff that's like disassociated from, you know, the Tribune or whatever, like the ones owned by larger institutions, billionaires and stuff.
Every billionaire wants a newspaper. We learned that in Citizen Kane. It was a long time ago. Every billionaire wants their own newspaper.
And like Succession, great example of how like rich people get in there and manipulate stuff to their own agenda. But like if you can find those grassroots kind of publications, or like you were saying, TikTokers who kind of have like a bent or a beat, I suppose. That's really great. The hard part with TikTok though is like, You have to find like real journalists on there because a lot of times it's people like regurgitating information they've heard that's
Yes.
not been like fact checked and stuff. This is like my passion these days is trying to tell friends who maybe don't have the same media literacy or like news sense, like how to find this stuff and like what to pay attention to. I feel like all of us with journalism backgrounds should be doing that more, like tell people, hey, look at this, not that. But yeah, it's like, yeah, the state of all of that is so different, but in some ways it's exciting. Like there's individuals kind of passionate about certain ideas, and that's also what I tell my friends. I've had a couple friends in the last 2 weeks while things have been really insane here in the States. They're feeling overwhelmed because it's like, there's stuff going on with like the presidency, but there's also like local issues going on, and it's just like this bombardment of information. And I always tell people, I'm like, don't read all of the Twitter, Instagram, like squares. Like, I mean, you can look at that stuff, but what I recommend is like find a newsletter written by like a journalist. Like, there's a really great Vox one that I read that like is digestible, like you said, information that, but it's like summing up the most important news of like that particular day with clarity and with like what you need to know, what you don't need to panic about, like whatever, with context. And so I always tell people, I'm like, find those things, like find a reporter you trust, look at things like that, remember the context. If you don't understand something and it feels overwhelming, do some of your own research. Like, yeah, I don't know, like it's just like really incumbent on us to care about the truth and not just like what's being filtered through is like headlines and stuff. And so again, yeah, this movie just really like hammers home that the truth being like the most important thing.
And media literacy, just from like most publications and papers, it's like, even though there are some papers in a show that have like a political agenda, even when I'm reading ones that are more of a like, say I just want to pick up a paper and the paper that I would prefer to pick up is not around, I'm just like, don't read the headline,
Yep.
read the first two paragraphs or three paragraphs, because that's where journalism still lives. It still lives
Yes,
in those,
exactly.
in the punchy fact base, I'm going to catch you later on in the cascading sort of like column opinion piece BS that everything has become because everything has to have a political agenda, or every newspaper is demanding a certain bent or a certain thesis on what's happening in the world. I'm like, if I need to get the actual like facts, I might read a couple of different publications. We have a national publication here in Australia, the ABC, and they've got their own issues, deep-seated institutional issues, which are currently being explored right now as well. But when I just think, I'm like, that journalism 101, the first three paragraphs are actually where all the where the key facts of the story are in a
Yeah.
consumable way. And everyone has got that stupid, like, extreme clickbait, trash
Yeah.
mag like headlines. I'm like, don't read the headline, go and
Yeah.
read the story, go and find the facts, have the in like our national news paper ABC on their app, they have these like five or six, what are the absolute key messages? I'm like, read that. That's where the
Yeah.
facts are of the story. And then the rest of it is an interpretation of those facts for the most part, designed to be more clickbaity and affronting in most publications. But I'm like, just do that. And the other thing that you would know deeply after working in the Tribune and working in journalism is like, still a lot of big publications have got to worry about libel laws. They're like the last institution that can worry about libel. I'm like, so most
Yep.
papers, despite whatever you think about their political agenda or who owns them, in the fact-based stories, in those key big stories, they're going to be like front pages and those sorts of things, or in the Metro section about like a legal case. The facts have to be crisp because they can get sued.
Yes.
And
And
so,
that's, yeah, I get really kind of annoyed when I see people like get mad when they use legal terms like allegedly. Like
yes.
if someone has not been formally charged for something, it's alleged, and that's a libel thing. And I see people get mad. They're like, well, who cares? Like, who cares about libel laws? Or like, these newspapers have money. And it's like, I mean, it's like the individuals can be sued. It's like there's a whole like system to that that you learn in journalism law classes that still matter. And like, yeah, and I think also going back to that like new sense, it's also like be okay with being wrong too. That's what I try to tell friends because some of them get, I had a little dispute with a friend in the Instagram DMs the other day because they were sharing some Instagram square, not some vetted thing that was talking about how there's like a congressperson, a Republican congressperson here in the States who's like putting forward some kind of law that would like allow a third like Trump, whatever, like the words are failing me.
Yeah,
Term.
like a term,
The
a
third
third
term.
term.
And the friend posted this and was like, well, we're fucked or whatever. And I responded and was like, listen, I don't want to like minimize the severity of like what's going on, but like in order for that to happen, it would have to be a constitutional amendment, and like two-thirds of the states would have to actually like agree to a constitutional amendment. It would be like a long process. I was trying to like add context that would like maybe de-escalate their panic.
This is not something to panic about because it's going to take so much
Yeah.
time and people are going to be concerned.
And I understand that like everything's kind of fracturing and who knows what laws will be, but like I was trying to just add like that journalism context, and they got kind of mad at me. They're like, well, don't like, this is like a really serious thing and like we should all be concerned. And I was like, we should be concerned about the right things, like the right things, and be open to being like, oh yeah, thank you for that context, or thank you for this. Like, don't just be like protective of your misinformation.
Oh my
And this
God.
is like smart people do this too. And so yeah, it's maybe we should just start showing spotlight to all of our friends.
I agree. And I'm so comfortable with being wrong. And what's
Yeah, me
really nice
too.
about this movie, to kind of close it up, is that they were wrong. Like
Yeah,
the
yeah.
deepest cuts of the movie that resonate, Robbie Robertson being like, I missed it. I didn't see that I had connections.
Yeah.
I didn't see that I had potential. And now I'm like literally editing the team that is there to do this exact job, and I missed it.
Yeah,
But you can,
yeah.
it's okay. It's like,
It happens. Yeah, human error is a part of these things too.
you
And
don't learn
yeah.
anything if you don't fuck up.
Yeah.
You
And
never
also,
do
like,
anything right the first time. It's literally,
totally.
it's and so when some people have an opinion like that, I'm like, that's not what it is. That's not what it is. It's like, and yeah, it's a very weird and fractured time in that like everyone is always bending and spinning a mistake or a bad opinion or a misinformation into their own thing. And it's just like we would be so much, and it's so much easier to write the worst thing or to emphasize the wrong thing to whip up a panic, to get the clicks, to get the engagement, to get those things. And we've just all become accustomed to it now. So that's why sometimes like it just makes me miss a really great local paper. It makes me miss a paper that cared way more about the people in the town that were reading it than the money that they were going to make from those people reading it. You know, like
Yeah,
it's
and you,
like they should go hand
yeah.
in glove. If we write important shit that people care about and that is fair reflection for all of the people in our community, people will like it and people will
Yeah.
want to consume it, even if it's stuff that they don't want to hear, but it's stuff that they need to hear.
Yeah, and I think we also see just like the patience in this story. Again, like Liev Schreiber telling them, don't even put out those micro stories
Nope.
until we're like rock solid on this stuff, because truth in this case, a million times more important than just like a snappy story in there, like, getting your reporting out there before it's crisp, like you said. And yeah, I think seeing the importance of that patience with news is really great in this movie too.
Lindsay, it's always a treat to talk to you. And this is a great movie. Just watch it. It's a terrific one. It's usually popping up on the streaming services in Australia. It's now like disappeared temporarily, but it was always in the Netflix carousel, which is probably what caused me, like you, to watch it like multiple times a year, because I was like, I don't want to watch any of this other garbage. Oh, there's Spotlight. Okay, cool. I'll put that on. Like I can totally passively comfort watch it. Please plug everything that you've got coming up so that folks can find all of your great stuff.
Yeah, you can. Well, first of all, you can follow me on Blue Sky. I'm on, that's
Yes,
our new Twitter, and I love
that's our new Twitter. Yeah.
it. Yeah, and I appreciate it. It just feels more, I don't know, whatever. I know everyone's got their opinions, but I like it so far. And so I'm just Lindsay Romaine on there, so I'll post any work there. I have a newsletter, a Substack newsletter that I update irregularly, but it's there. I also have some stuff coming up for Bright Wall Dark Room. I have a Nerdist essay coming up about Yellow Jackets. Yeah, a few other things, but they'll all be posted there if you're interested.
You're the best. Love you. Thank you so much for doing this. Love this movie. And yeah, a rare best picture in the Decade Project that's still worthwhile and hanging around. And I think it's immediacy. It's not like looking back like All the President's Men with this beautiful glowing halo of like, pioneering journalism and knocking on doors all the time necessarily. But Man Alive, it does have it's no longer a nostalgia for a profession or an investigation. It's a nostalgia for like a community that can care about itself.
Yeah, great community movie. Yeah, absolutely.
Great community movie. Municipal. but thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you on another Decade Project soon.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.